Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
It is episode number 53 of the Awful Announcing Podcast, and I believe episode number 2 of the quarantine edition of the pod. What's good, everybody? Ben Heisler here. Appreciate all of you, as always, for joining us for today's episode where the legend Ernie Johnson from Turner Sports is set to be a part of the show. We'll get to all the great stuff Ernie Johnson is doing in just a second, but I do want to take an opportunity to just say thanks to so many of you for continuing to help flatten the curve. You guys are maintaining social distancing, and especially just a huge debt of gratitude to essential workers, to doctors, nurses, medical workers for putting themselves at risk to really take care of so many of us. It's become nearly impossible for us at this point, I think, to not know someone personally who's been impacted by COVID-19, and while staying home and quarantining sucks, especially for so many of you that have young kids at home and you're trying to homeschool while also work, this is still working and it's still helping us get through this. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All of you guys know Ernie Johnson, right? He's synonymous with the NBA on TNT. He's the host of the most interesting pregame and postgame show on television. But many of us are now getting a chance to see him in a bit of a different light amidst the coronavirus. For example, he's doing a live show Mondays and Wednesdays on the NBA Twitter handle, where he's interviewing guys like Adam Silver, Damian Lillard, Raptors president Masai Ujiri was just on, and they've all had close to about 1 million views, all just online. But it's actually helped raise more than $76 million to support relief efforts, stop the spread of COVID-19, and it's also helped raise over 5 million meals for food insecure populations. Very cool. But that's not all. He's also hosting a podcast called The Steam Room with his good buddy Charles Barkley, who you can also see on the NBA on TNT. And we've probably talked about this, I would say, the most during the podcast as far as some of his new work goes. But he started a journalism school online. It's free. It features some of the biggest names in sports broadcasting, like Scott Van Pelt, Dan Hicks and Hannah Stormore are part of it, Stu Gatz. He goes on to go through the entire list of people that's been on. Kevin Harlan was just recently on, friend of the show. Also, a lot of names that are behind the scenes, behind the camera as well. And if you're a broadcast dork like I am, it's just phenomenal content. So we got into all of it, why he started it, the significance of how it impacts actual college students who had their semesters cut short. And then, of course, what we do on the show, get lots of stories, plenty of them from his rise throughout broadcasting. Really intriguing stuff about his apprehension of working alongside with his dad in Atlanta. And we also got a little behind the music of his 30-plus years at the NBA on TNT as well. A lot of fun stories, especially behind the games that they play with Kenny, with Chuck, and with Shaq. So that's all coming up in just a second here on the Awful Announcing Podcast. Friendly reminder, you can always visit awfulannouncing.com. The crew is always working around the clock with new content. We got the NFL draft coming up right around this episode. Also, the return of the PGA may be close as well. Lots of articles, plenty of commentary and more. That's all over at awfulannouncing.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Awful Announcing. If you want to follow me, you can do so at Benny Heiss. Our guest Ernie Johnson can be found at Turner Sports EJ. And lastly, if you enjoy the show, you have thoughts on the show, whatever it might be, please rate and review the podcast over at Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or, frankly, wherever you get your podcast from. You guys also might hear a few moments where you hear a young child making silly noises in the background. That would be my 11-month-old. He's starting to learn his voice and just how far it can travel, sometimes even from upstairs in a closed room with my wife. It made me laugh over the course of the interview. Hopefully it won't bother you guys, but we're all still trying to get adjusted to whatever the sort of new normal is. Anyway, I could have talked to him for hours, but we did it just for 30 minutes instead. Ernie Johnson, the voice of Turner Sports, right here on the Awful Announcing Podcast. This is really exciting to have on the Awful Announcing Podcast, a four-time Emmy winner. He's also the host of the best pre- and post-game show on television, the Hall of Fame awarded inside the NBA on TNT. And like I told him before we started recording, this man has decided to find ways to become arguably the busiest broadcaster in America. You have the Steam Room podcast with Charles Barkley, the NBA Together show on Mondays and Wednesdays, and a few weeks back, EJ's journalism school launched as schools closed around the country. This school was opened via Twitter and Periscope. It's incorporated some of the biggest names in broadcasting and journalism, giving an hour, sometimes two, of their time to speak directly to students and others that want to learn a little bit more about the craft. And he's also a New York best-selling author as well. Ernie Johnson, good enough to join us on the Awful Announcing podcast. EJ, it's great to have you on. I appreciate your time.
Ben, thank you very much. And that was way too kind of an introduction. I appreciate you, man.
No, it's good to have you on. So besides working several different jobs and helping to educate and entertain the masses, how have you and your family been trying to pass the time throughout the pandemic? What have you guys been up to?
Well, I think all of us are kind of learning as we go. This pandemic did not come with a user guide that says, okay, day one you do this, day two you do this. We've all, you know, I think you have, I have, everybody has kind of been learning on the fly. And what my wife Cheryl and I have tried to do is I think try to maintain as natural a rhythm to a day as we can, because right at the start it was just, you know, standing there looking at each other like, what are we going to do? And it's I think we're just trying to do what we're told, Ben, even though that can be a difficult thing. And everybody, you know, we've seen it in all the sports leagues and in college athletics, you know, how, you know, a lot of people had the rug taken out from under them, the day after our last show, I guess March 13th, we had planned a 60th birthday party, a surprise 60th birthday party for my wife at a restaurant outside Atlanta, and we had to cancel that at the last second. You know, it's like, wow, you know, it was painful, but it was the right thing to do. And so we're just trying to obey what the health officials are telling us to do. And when that, even though that means you can't see certain people and you can't do what you normally do, it's what we have to do right now.
I think the routine part about what you just said is so helpful and so beneficial to so many people, even just from my own personal experience. Like, my wife is a teacher, and now she's teaching from home, and we have an 11-month-old son who is normally going to daycare. And once we eventually got into some sort of a routine, that helped move the days along, and we found a way to continue to connect with our families. And you're right, once something feels unordinary, you know, it's going to feel different. But then when the unordinary becomes somewhat ordinary and routine, you can feel like, okay, there's a pace to it and I can start to get used to it a little bit more. And I think you're right. It just sort of, even by following instructions, you feel like you're doing the right thing and you can also sustain it a little bit.
Yeah. And I really do think that, you know, that rhythm and that routine, you know, it does move the day along a little bit. It's not like you look up and say, I got up at 9 and now it's 10:15 and now it's 10:30 and now it's 10:45. I mean, when you do have those things that are planned into the day, I think it does help. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, I was kind of just sitting and thinking, what can I do? I mean, one day I just said, you know what, I just think I'm just going to get on Twitter and just, you know, kind of throw it open. You know, just, you know, I'm just going to tweet something out here, like, who wants to talk about stuff, you know? And then I thought about it, and I called our social media folks, and I said, how difficult would it be for me to try to do a video thing? And I didn't even know you could do Twitter Live. And they said, no, you can get on. They explained how you do it. And I said, so I'm going to go on Twitter Live, and I'm going to take questions, and we're going to gear this toward broadcasting students. Because, college athletes, you know, felt like, wow, we didn't get to play in March Madness, and there's no baseball, no softball, no, you know, no spring sports. And I said, but students, you know, it's the same way. It's like some were about to graduate, some were, you know, some were ready to walk, some, you know, were still trying to get that first job. And I said, well, let's kind of do an online journalism school. And I did the first episode, and I stayed probably about an hour and 20 minutes answering live questions. And then I just said, I'm going to just start calling all my buddies and see who else wants to do an hour. And so, like, that first week, you know, so Seth Davis was on there, Brian Anderson's on, Matt Weiner. The next week's James Brown. We had Ali LaForce. You had Stu Gotts from the Dan Levitard show. You had, you know, it just went on and on. Scott Van Pelt, Steve Levy. And then, you know, this week it's, I'm trying to think who we've had. This week, Kevin Harlan yesterday went 2 hours.
Yeah, he was great.
And yeah, he was tremendous. And you know what's amazing, Ben, is you find yourself, I mean, I've been broadcasting for 40 years, and I'm the last 30 at Turner. But I listen to these, and there are nuggets I picked up from Brian Anderson, from James Brown, from Kevin Harlan in the course of this thing, that I said, you know what, I never really thought about that. I might even try that. You know, and it's that's been the really cool part. So I think journalism students are getting invaluable information. I mean, this is the kind of stuff, you know, you wouldn't get all these guys in the classroom all the time. And one of the weeks, what I did was geared it toward the behind-the-scenes jobs, because for as many people as you see on the air, there are, you know, multiples of folks working behind the scenes. So I had directors, producers, everybody on that show to talk about how they wound up where they are. So that's been, you know, that's been a cool thing. And I know a lot of guys like Mike Tirico, we had on the show the other day, and he's been doing a lot of stuff with the Syracuse J School up there, you know, just doing Zooms with their class. So a lot of us are kind of in that realm of trying to, you know, help the next generation of broadcasters, but these guys are helping me too, because I'm kind of like picking up a few things that I had never thought about, and it's pretty cool.
These are world-class guests that you're bringing on as part of the journalism school, and you're right, you've been doing this for a long time, and so being able to now apply something that you learned from a Brian Anderson or a Mike Tirico or a Scott Van Pelt, any of them in particular stand out to you as far as what they've done? And yeah.
No, exactly. I mean, and one of the things that's cool is that, look, we all have a different path. You know, there's a different path that took me to Awful Announcing, and a different path that took me through Macon and Spartanburg and to Atlanta and then to Turner, or Brian Anderson doing stats in San Antonio and doing minor league baseball. But here, one of the things that stood out as I was listening to BA, he said, I think about the three S's when I'm doing a baseball game. You know, he's the voice of the Brewers and does baseball on PBS with me. And so he says, I think about the three S's. He said, so imagine you're spinning plates, and the three S's being stories and stats and silence. He said, so how am I doing as I spin these plates? Am I giving too many stats? Okay, let's back that one off. Am I talking too much? Let's use the silence plate here. You know, and so I thought about that, and I said, what a wonderful analogy that is. Is it getting too stats heavy? You know, is there too much silence or not enough silence? Am I talking too much? Am I telling too many stories? Am I not telling enough? You know, and so I said, that is really useful. I'm glad I had him on this thing. and that's been the fun thing. Is like, it's not like every day I have to get on and introduce these guys. I just tell them, look, when the clock says 2 o'clock Eastern time, it's yours. Don't wait for me to say, hey, now here's Brian Anderson. You just sit down and say, this is who I am. This is who I got here. Now let me see your questions. And they float up on the screen, and that hour goes by remarkably quickly. And so it's been a really cool thing. I need to go back and hear what Adam Lefkoe had to say today, because he had the floor. And then tomorrow, like Hannah Storm and Dan Hicks, husband and wife, are going to do one together about their careers. It's been a wonderful learning experience, and I hope that the students out there realize what they're getting. I mean, you're getting this great practical information and all these nuggets that you're not going to get on your own. I mean, and that was the part about journalism school that I always loved when I was at the University of Georgia, was when a professor would bring in somebody who's actually doing that. And we would just pepper them with questions. And so this is that same version, you know, about, what, 40, 42 years later.
I've had a blast watching those episodes. I'll continue to do so. And I'm glad that you brought up the different paths that all of us have sort of led to, including yourself. And that gig and that path for you ended up in Atlanta, and having a chance to broadcast with your dad calling Braves games in the mid-1990s. And you know, too, Ernie, that sounds like it could be so many folks' dream come true. I'm thinking about Joe Buck, how he always would talk about how he considered his dad to be his best friend. And you know, I think about Tom and Marty Brenneman in Cincinnati. And while I think there's sort of a natural understanding that this could be a wonderful family moment to be able to work together, I also am curious to know if there was any apprehension on your part in going into the field together.
Oh, that was big time apprehension on my part because, this was, and I'd been on TV since 1979 at the time, and I'd been at Turner. I started at Turner in 89. So you're talking mid-90s, I get this opportunity to do this whenever my Turner schedule would allow. I could do these games on Sports South with my dad. And it was terribly intimidating because my dad did Braves baseball for 30 years, and he was beloved by Braves fans. He just had the greatest easygoing style, and he was just comfortable, and he was just, like Uncle Ernie to all the folks who would listen, because it was just like he was sitting on the front porch telling the stories and calling the game, and it's what my dad loved. And so, for me to be in that arena, be sitting shoulder to shoulder with him, I was just trying not to embarrass him and get him to the point where, like in the bottom of the sixth, he just walked out of the booth and got in the car. So, it was a really special time. And no matter who I worked with in my career, Charles and Shaq and Kenny on the NBA and, Cal Ripken before on baseball games and Ron Darling and all these great folks I've gotten to work with, nothing will compare to having that opportunity to work games with my dad. That was that's the top of the heap.
When over the course of your career, Ernie, did you feel like you found your voice, that you knew that you weren't sounding like any broadcaster that you aspired to be, and maybe that person was your father, or maybe it could have been other influences in your life, but when did you feel like this is Ernie Johnson Jr. doing the voice and doing the type of broadcast that you felt like was totally normal and perfect for your style when you felt like yourself? Do you remember that moment at all?
I think it was probably when I was anchoring the weekend sports in Atlanta, my third stop, when you first start, because I was on the radio when I started out, and I'm on, I'm going to school and I'm doing drive time news and sports and I'm just, trying to survive each newscast and do them the right way and not say anything so stupid that, the GM comes in and says, "That's enough, kid, you're done." And then, the first job that I got in TV was a news job. And that wasn't ideal for me because I really wanted to be a sportscaster. But I told myself, look, it's tough enough to get in this racket. And so if somebody's going to hire you, get in the door and do it. And I still tell people that now. I said, this may not be the dream job you have or think it's the ideal spot. But once you get in that arena and once you get in that setting and you're learning every day more than you can possibly comprehend, there will be opportunities that come up. And so for me, I think, starting out in news in Macon and then also doing news in Spartanburg and in Atlanta when they hired me at WSB, I was like, I thought pretty much, okay, this is going to be a news career until a new news director takes over one day. And I'm filling in for one of the sports guys doing a live shot at Atlanta Stadium and before a Braves game. And then, I get called into his office the next day and I'm thinking, here's his second full day on the job and he's going to have me pack my box and get out. And he says, no, he said, you thought about doing sports rather than news. And I said, yeah, I always wanted to. But he said, I think I'd like to make you the weekend sports anchor. And so all of a sudden, the trajectory of your career just changes totally. And so, you go from, the life and death stories on the news side to the toy department. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm in sports now. What's that mean? It was like I lived my whole life in sports, with a dad who played and with that background on the radio. So I think after all those weekends, like 6 years of doing weekends at Channel 2, where you're producing the show, you've got a photographer who's shooting some local stuff and doing some editing for you, but basically you're writing the show, it's in your voice, and you're kind of, I think that's kind of where I where I really found a comfort zone and could be myself. And then obviously when I got to Turner, you know, there was a little of that, but I think when Chuck came aboard joining me and Kenny and kind of turned our show into something that people hadn't seen very much, it allowed me to even more to be who I am. And I think people could see, you know, like the, you know, what made me, you know, I have kind of a quirky sense of humor. I could use that, you know? I think that's, you know, so the combination of all those weekends in Atlanta working and then when Chuck came aboard at Turner, that's where I think it really took hold fully, I believe.
I'm really glad you brought that up too, because I love talking about Inside the NBA. And I know that you've been asked before all sorts of times about the success of the show and why the formula works. And you brought up the idea of when Charles joined the show and formulated this really dynamic relationship with you and Kenny Smith. And I know that it may not have just taken a moment. When did you realize maybe that there was something sort of uniquely special, and was there a moment of introspection for you where you knew that something was just going to be different about the three of you guys working together in this space, in this type of format?
Well, I think from the very first week, you knew that there was something a little different because, you know, Kenny and I had worked together for a couple of years. We kind of had a rhythm down and it was basically a two-man thing. And then here comes Chuck, you know, and he was like the prized free agent that year. Everybody wanted, you know, Charles Barkley to come work for him. And you never know if a guy's personality as a player is going to translate when the red light goes on. But to Charles' credit, you know, this guy who was always sought out for every opinion that he had on every topic as a player, he was willing to share all that on TV as well and be the same person. So that's rare. That's very important, because I've seen other guys who appear during their playing careers to be, wow, what a good sense of humor. That guy'd be fun to hang around. And then the red light goes on and the sweat beads pop out and it's like, man, he'd rather be anywhere else. But that was never the case with Chuck. But I remember that first week, and he asked Kenny, as they sat down to do a halftime show, and we're live, you know, and he says, Kenny, what are you going to say about whatever the topic was going to be? And Kenny said, you'll find out. And that set the tone. That was like, look, we're not going to sit around and say, I'm going to ask this, you say this. When he says that, you say this. I'll laugh and throw to you, and then you laugh, and I'll throw to commercial break. It was like, you'll find out. And so that's the way we have played it now for, you know, I've been there 30 years, but for 20 years, we've had me and Kenny and Chuck together, and that's the way it's been every night. You know, they don't come to the production meeting. You know, they don't know what's coming next, and they're not invited to the production meeting because we don't want them to know that, you know, that someplace during the night, we're going to break out this piece of video that's going to just broadside Kenny. We don't want anybody to know that. And so I think that's what's made it fun for us to do on a nightly basis. And for the viewer, I think the unpredictability and the spontaneity and, you know, just the natural reactions that you get. You can tell this isn't a rehearsed show. You can tell that these guys, nobody really knew who was going to talk next. Sometimes whoever yells the loudest gets heard, you know? And so, but I think that's what fans kind of gravitated toward. And if you didn't know what was going to happen next, half the time, neither did I, and that's a good thing.
I think authenticity plays, and it's demonstrated really well over the course of the show, not just in the analysis, not just when you guys have had to have very difficult conversations. I'm thinking just even recently about when the NBA decided to shut down due to COVID-19 after the 2016 election. Authenticity plays. But it's also can play really well on the fun side, too. And one of my favorite YouTube videos, Ernie, to watch ahead of the NBA season, and occasionally I'll you know, indulge myself and enjoy it during the season, too, are all the old-time Inside the NBA games, the who he played for, how you say that.
Yeah.
But the one that's my personal favorite, and I'd love to get a little bit more perspective from you, it goes back years ago. It was a game that you guys called Where We At. And Charles had to identify five countries on a map in 90 seconds. You had Professor John Thompson giving him the prompts. And I swear, EJ, I crack up every time you say it, because the first prompt he was given was the Democratic Republic of the Congo. I think he puts it up in Norway. And then about 30 seconds in, he decides to move it, to which you say, "He's changing Congo," and it gets me. It gets me every time. And I'm wondering if you could talk to us about the origin of these games, and maybe any of them that maybe might be the most memorable for you.
Yeah, I think that game was a spin-off of Who He Played For. I think Who He Played For was the first one that we really did, and then continued to do in the first week of the season, year in, year out. And it was basically just one of these things where, you know, after a couple of seasons of knowing early on in the season that Chuck had no idea where some of the player movement had taken place. And he's like, you know, we'd do a highlight. He's like, what's he doing there? Well, he signed with them. So we kind of, you know, but the great thing about our show is that the producers, Tim Kiley and Jeremy Levin, take ideas from everybody. And so when we have these production meetings, minus, you know, Kenny, Chuck, and Shaq, we would have these meetings, and sometimes over the phone on a day when we weren't on the air, and say, so what can we do? What can we do to take this a little further with Chuck not knowing where guys are playing? And we said, well, let's, you know, and Alex Hoover is who puts all the heads on the, you know, on the gone fishing, on the bodies and all that stuff. Mm. He's like, I could kind of create a spinning wheel, like on a game show. And so we would sit around and we would kind of brainstorm and say, okay, here are 15 names. Let's pick five. And let's see if Chuck tonight, we'll see if Chuck knows where these guys play now. Part of it came from, you know, Kenny just said that kind of off the cuff one night, who he play for. And so that became the name of the show. And so here we did it, just big game show style. And that old microphone, that skinny microphone that, you know, Bob Barker and Wink Martindale would use. And we say, so I remember the first time we did it, Chuck had no idea what the heck we were doing. You know, and here's the spinning wheel, and here's, you know, player X who's on, who did he play, you know, who he play for. And he would take a guess, and he'd go 0 for 5, 0 for 5, 0 for 5 for the first few seasons. Then eventually he'd get one. But then it got to the point where it was just the look on his face when that first Thursday of the season, when it was the last segment of the show, and I would be doing the lead-in somewhere, say, annually, the game show, and he's, oh, no. And so it has become so much fun. But I think the geography thing was just a spin-off on that when, you know, Chuck had said something on the air where you wondered if he knew where any place was. So, you know, in a production meeting, brilliantly, somebody comes up with, how about some kind of a show where we test his geography? Bang, we'll do it. Here comes this big map. Here we use that. And that's the way it works with our show. I mean, everybody contributes ideas. You know, we've had a diaper-changing contest between Chuck and Kenny. When Chuck, you know, told Kenny, he didn't know, you know, Kenny disliked 2 weeks of shows because his wife had a baby several years ago, and he says, yeah. And when he finally came back, he was like, yeah, I've been changing diapers and doing feedings, and it's like Chuck said, you don't know how to change a diaper. So what happens later that night? Yeah, big diaper changing contest, and so we're not afraid to do anything, you know. And some of it's gonna soar and be really funny, and people are gonna be talking about it the next day. And some of it's gonna absolutely bomb, but that's okay. You know, that's part of the territory. And a lot of times when things don't go as well as maybe we thought they would, it sometimes turns out funnier. And I always go back to, you know, when I grew up watching Johnny Carson, you know, a lot of the stuff that he did on the air, you know, he was really funny and he had exquisite timing. But there was also this innate ability he had of if something bombed, he played it off just perfectly. So that's part of what we try to do. When the bit sounds great in the production meeting and then doesn't quite meet those expectations, we still want folks talking about it.
EJ, I could talk for you for hours, but I know that your time is limited, so I'll leave you on this note. You've had an opportunity, like you said, 30 plus years with Turner, and work with some incredible personalities, and Charles Barkley and Shaq and Kenny and Craig Sager. come to mind. Kevin Garnett's been a part of Area 21. And so you've had all these remarkable times where I would imagine stories are filling up in your head. And I hate to put you on the spot, but do any stand out, any incredible, memorable, hilarious moments of being together with all these people, whether it be on the road, whether it be in studio, that just might give a description of sort of the fun chaos that you get to be a part of each and every week? Any that come to mind?
I think that in terms of, you know, Shaq entertains us every commercial break, really. I mean, he will tell stories about his childhood that you do not think could possibly be true, but they are. And he's doing that in the span of 2.5 minutes while we're taking a commercial break. And I'm trying to listen to the producers telling me what we're going to do in the next segment. But what I've enjoyed the most is just the camaraderie with these guys. And I grew up with two older sisters, and this is as close as I'll ever come to having brothers. And we, you know, what's funny, and they always talk about it, is anybody who comes up to see me or see them in public, they're always, hey, Kenny, hey, where's Chuck and Ernie? Where's Shaq? And I get the same thing, you know. You're in the bathroom at the airport, and somebody says, hey, where's Shaq? You know, it's like, he's not in here with me, don't you know? So it's like we seem to be linked together, and people think, well, you must spend all of your time together, and it's not the way it is. We do, you know, we communicate a lot, you know, even during this time, when we're on the road for the playoffs and that kind of thing. We may have a dinner or two together, but a lot of us have, you know, production folks we want to go out with, and we'll, you know, and so it's not like we're joined at the hip when we're off the air. But these guys have been tremendous friends and colleagues. And I know I've talked so long about that and not answered your question about a really good story. You know, now that, you know, later tonight I'll be sitting around and say, oh, you know what, I shouldn't have told Ben that story. But, you know, a lot of the time the best stories you get are back like from their playing days, when they'll just, you know, talk about, oh yeah, that guy, I played with him and this happened and that kind of thing. So, you know, and again, some of those I think need to remain in the sanctity of the green room at Studio Jet.
Perfectly fair. And again, if in case the story doesn't make it on this podcast, you might be able to hear one, whether it be when you're hosting NBA Together via the NBA handle on social media, maybe certainly, I would say almost guaranteed, as part of the Steam Room podcast, because you know Charles is always going to have stories to tell. You can download those on Thursdays. Of course, EJ's Journalism School, which we talked about as well, and you can find that at Turner Sports EJ on Twitter. And then, of course, don't forget his book, Unscripted, The Unpredictable Moments That Make Life Extraordinary. EJ, this was fun. I enjoyed getting a chance to learn a little bit more about you. Appreciate you spending some time with us amidst everything going on. And certainly I hope that basketball returns for many reasons, but one of them is that the game gets back together again and we can watch inside the NBA and have a little bit more fun with all these different games. So thank you for the time. This is a pleasure talking to you.
No, Ben, I appreciate your interest, man, and I appreciate the questions. It was really fun for me, and thanks for plugging those shows that we have been kind of doing for NBA TV and for NBA platforms like the NBA Together. Had Adam Silver on last week, had DeMar DeRozan on last week, talked to Masai Ujiri, which was a fascinating interview yesterday. And I don't say that because I did the interview, just because he has a fascinating story. And be sitting down with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar tomorrow. So we're all trying to keep our hands in the air, trying to encourage one another, doing what we're told in hopes that, you know, maybe one of these days we'll be back. But a bigger concern is that we all stay as healthy as we can and help each other as much as we can. So,
absolutely.
Thank you much. And it's been a pleasure talking to you, Ben. Thank you.